This is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendusky.
And you're listening to Start Writing.
And for the discussion piece this month, and probably spanning out for the next couple months, we'll be discussing character arcs. And so today, specifically, we're going to be talking about the character lie or the character secret, sometimes referred to the ghost or the wound. And there's a lot of different terminology that refer to different pieces of this or the whole thing. So I'm going to try and cover that all right now, and then you can kind of sort through it as we go. I guess the genesis for this podcast is I've read a lot of writers talk about when they're creating their characters, they're like, I always give somebody a secret, or I always give all of them a secret. And I was like, what is all this secret about? Like, and then other writers will refer to it as the character lie, which I hadn't heard a lot, but is a much better definition. So what I found the easiest way for me to understand this concept in relation to my own life and other people I know is I call this the if only, right? A lot of us have this, I will be happy if only I lose so much weight, if only I get a better job, if only I'm making more money, right? A lot of us carry around these ideas in us that we will get happiness if only we achieve or have these certain changes in our life. And that's very much what a character lie is about. This is a misconception of reality that a character tells themselves, and in it, it shapes a lot of their decisions, which cause a lot of problems in their lives. And so
I'd like to distinguish, I think, make a distinction here. So I've written characters who have secrets, and that's something that they're not willing to tell to other people. Whereas the character lie is something that they're not willing to admit to themselves, and it's holding them back.
So in talking about character arcs, there are the four basic arcs. There's the positive arc, where they go from a belief that is causing problems in their lives to changing their view about it and it leading to positive changes in their life, and then the story arc. Then there's the negative arc. Usually there's some kind of incident that takes place and the character begins a spiral downward. Negative character arcs you're going to see a lot in television series or even novel series. Because they are so long, the characters kind of go in this up and down through having positive changes and negative changes come about. I've been watching Fear the Walking Dead recently, and there's a lot of negative character arcs that span three or four episodes, and then it's addressed and it changed, and it's very much kind of an undulating storyline for the character arcs that way to manage drama for such a long series. So as far as novels go, the sci-fi series The Expanse, I checked out the first season, loved it, and I've been reading the book since. I'm a book four. And so if you've read them, in book two, Holden experiences a negative character arc in the way he chooses to handle conflict. If you're familiar with the series, he's very level-headed and he's very charismatic, and he tends to talk his way out of problems. Not to say that he's silver-tongued, but rather he finds a way to resolve conflict without being violent as often as possible. And in that second book, he has a negative character arc where he begins to choose violence first, and it becomes kind of a big issue throughout most of the book. A little bit of a spoiler there.
Oh, that's great. So yeah. I haven't read the second yet, but yeah, in the first one, he has a very strong moral sense, and he's not willing to do any violence if it's at all immoral or like against his code.
So he does start to become quite violent, and violent becomes kind of his go-to way of solving problems. And it's Naomi who really forces him to be like, you've got to deal with this. Something's going on. Cool. Yeah, so those are some examples of negative character arcs, and the reasons why people insert them is managing drama for these really long periods. I imagine if we look at Harry Potter, you'll definitely see some negative character arcs as well, developing probably within the book series, maybe not within the movies.
I like to think that that's true to life, that most of us are improving in the macro view, but that we all have our ups and downs and we regress, even though, so we're not always improving. Yeah. But
So then the third type is the no change, whereas this is not really an arc as they don't change. But if you think of a character like James Bond, he doesn't have a positive arc or negative arc. It's a story about the action adventure, and his character is not something that changes within that storyline. And then the final, it's, again, this one, not so much an arc as it is also a straight line, but this is the steadfast, where the character has this belief and the world is trying to force them to change. And the big character story there is that they refuse to. They stand steadfast in their beliefs. So if we look at Harry Potter and Mrs. Umbridge, she is trying to force him to deny the existence of Voldemort, right? Like, she works really hard, and to the point that even his friends are like, dude, just say the thing and just give it, like, I mean, you don't have to believe it, just say it so she'll stop punishing you, right? And Harry stands steadfast, and so that's a steadfast storyline. And you know, that's actually it's a fairly common one, like particularly when you're dealing with rebels and different things like that, is they have this belief or this perspective and the world tries to get them to change their view, and they refuse to, and they make that steadfast stand. So
that steadfast makes me think of Atticus in To Kill a Mockingbird. But I'm not sure I'm clear on no change versus steadfast. So I guess one is just like zero energy, like they're not pursuing anything in particular.
Well, yeah. So in the no change, the character arc is not addressed at all. Whereas, like you said, Atticus Finch, this entire town.
You see a lot of character in him.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of conflict and pressure on the character trait itself, you know, his honesty in presenting the truth of what really happened here. And despite all of the social pressure and even violence threatened against him and his family, he is steadfast.
So James Bond is not wrestling with any moral issue. And so he doesn't have to make a choice, whereas Atticus is wrestling. And you could see him backing down, like caving to the pressure, but he doesn't. He chooses not to.
Yeah, you can see the struggle. And so the difference between the no change and the steadfast is whether or not there are elements of plot that create conflict around the character themselves and their beliefs and whatnot, and the character's character. So
I remember in some of my writing classes, it came up, well, people would just say you need dynamic characters. And I do think that you can have a no change character arc and have a good character, or a steadfast. Like, they don't have to change necessarily, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd want to use those exclusively, but I think you can have really great characters that aren't necessarily transforming throughout the narrative.
Right.
Is that, I mean,
yeah, well,
fair
I mean,
to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. So, but yeah, and so those are the four kinds of arcs. And so today we're going to be focusing on the character lie. And the character lie is usually dealing with a positive arc. So essentially you have a character who has a belief and it complicates their life. So a lot of times the lie then in turn creates what they want, right? And then you have the difference in what they want versus what they actually need in their life, right? So Travis laughed at me when I talked about this example with him, but it's a good example. So in the movie Cars, Lightning McQueen...
It's very out of character for Joe.
Yeah, in the movie Cars, Lightning McQueen is convinced that to become the champion he wants to be, he has to do it all by himself. And so in the opening race, he refuses to let his pit crew help him and change out his tires. And because of that, they blow out before the finish, and he doesn't lose, but he ties, you know. And then after the race, he wants nothing to do with his sponsors, you know, Rusty's. And, you know, he's very much all about doing it all by himself. And then he ends up in Radiator Springs, and he has to learn that he can't do it all by himself, and he can do better with people, which by the end of the movie, you see, like, preparing for the race, he gets help from everybody at Radiator Springs as he goes in to prepare for that final race. And, you know, I guess he technically doesn't win, but he could have won, right? But again, he learns that importance of those relationships and depending on other people. And so the story is about what he wants and what he needs. What he wants is to win the Piston Cup and to do it all by himself. Right? That's what he wants, and that character lie is that he has to do it all by himself. And what he needs is to learn to depend on other people and build positive relationships with the people around him. And which is what he learns from his experience there in Radiator Springs, and is what he brings into the final race, and why he chooses not to win, but to help the guy who gets in the wreck in the final race and helps him cross the finish line, because he's learned that's more important, right? And so that's kind of the root of the character line, and kind of a look at how this spans out into the character arc. So another classic example everybody knows is Scrooge, right? The character lie is, of Scrooge is he is convinced that his worth and the only thing of value in the world is money, right? His personal worth and the only thing of value worth acquiring in the world is money, because he is ridiculously wealthy and he lives like he's in poverty. The house is big, but he like doesn't even heat it properly because he's trying to save money. You know, because he just wants more money. Like, he doesn't even have a goal of spending it and using it for anything. He just wants more of money itself. Right? So that's the character lie that he has. And what he wants is more money. What he needs is to learn that, you know, money is, you know, there's a lot more that is far more important than in money. And, you know, about treating people that way. Hmm. And so that's what the whole story of the allegory of Scrooge is about his character arc and him learning this. So that's, I guess that's probably a better example to go with, because it's everybody knows this story.
Yeah, it's a perfect example.
So and that is the entirety of the story, is his character arc, you know, and it's broken into three distinct segments with three ghosts for each.
Let me try just stating that. So in the beginning, Scrooge thinks that he'll be better off by saving his money. And in the end, he realizes that he's much better off by sharing it. And so in the beginning, he's creating cold and darkness for himself and for others. And in the end, he's creating light and warmth for himself and for others.
Yeah, that works. So in K.M. Wyland, she gave Caleb Wyland's book, I think it's just called Character Arcs, but she gave this great example, and I really liked it. And she said, character lies are like a tooth with a cavity. Most people hate the dentist and avoid it. When a tooth starts to go bad, we avoid dealing with it. Mm. We chew on the other side of our mouth, avoid crunching food and gum, and it can go on for years like this. Like if you think about Castaway, right? Like that's exactly how he tries to deal with that situation with his bad tooth.
But I love that movie.
But eventually it builds and it gets worse and causes problem until eventually it has to be dealt with. Just like Castaway, right? Like he's trying to chew on the other side of his mouth. He's trying to find different things he can eat that won't agitate it. And it goes on. And eventually he's like, I just have to do it. He takes the rock and he smashes the tooth out of his head. Right?
Oh, gosh.
but you know, I mean, like, I myself, you know, remember this growing up. Like, if I got a cavity, you know, unless you had a toothache, you just avoid telling people, you know? Like, chew on the other side of your mouth, avoid certain foods, and you'll be fine. And that is exactly how the character lie works. These people have come to believe this, and despite the problems it creates in their life, they chew on the other side, you know, and they avoid certain things, and they get along. Because what they want is to not go to the dentist. What they need is that tooth fixed.
So this has to do with the character not being willing to confront a truth.
Right.
What about the reader? Does the reader need to recognize that, okay, you need to pull out this tooth? Like, the reader should see that there's a lie going on, right? Is that?
I don't, like, because when I saw Cars, it didn't like pop out to me like clearly this is his problem. You know, as soon as somebody said Lightning McQueen is totally selfish and self-involved and needs to learn to depend on other people, and he learns that, be like, oh yeah, that's totally how that story goes. But if you look at like Scrooge, if you don't see that, then you're blind, because you're beat over the head with it. Clearly his problem is he is greedy without any end goal for money. Like, his greed is pure greed. He just wants money. Hmm. Right? Like, he has no plan to enjoy it at any point, and it is making him miserable, literally. And he can't see that, but everyone else can see it very clearly. You know, so with Scrooge, you need to see it because that's the whole story. If you can't see the character lie in Scrooge, you won't understand the whole story that's being told in The Christmas Carol.
Hmm. So maybe the Scrooge example is a little on the nose. I feel like if I were writing the next draft of that, now that you say this, I think I would make a reason so that we could empathize with Scrooge's greed. I would try to make believing the lie understandable.
Right. I think that's a level of depth that's really important in creating that lie. And so with Scrooge, the lie is so extreme that it's hard for us to empathize with. Mm-hmm. But I think there's definitely two dynamics to approaching that. And, you know, one is creating that backstory where we can relate. We maybe be like, well, I can see that that's a screwed up belief, but I can see why you believe that, right? A strong backstory can do that. But on the other hand, you can pick, if you pick a lie that's not as dynamic, something people can relate to. Like, I cannot even tell you how many people think their lives will be so much better if they lose some weight. Not only that, that's a multi-billion dollar business, is convincing people of that or selling them products because of that belief, right? So if you have a belief that common, I don't think you need a strong backstory supporting it. Like, people can be like, yeah, most people just believe that.
Yeah.
You know? And then, you know, some of them lose the weight, some of them don't. But a lot of them who lose the weight, they feel better for a while, but for the most part, it doesn't change their life. They just wear thinner clothes.
Oh, like, really?
That's the big change when you lose weight. You just wear smaller clothes.
Hmm.
So.
That's interesting. Man, to the listeners, I just have to say, I love A Christmas Carol. And so, while I do think I might change it if I redrafted it, I don't mean to diss on it at all. I think it's a great story.
It is. Well, and the kind of on-the-nose style writing was just the style at the time, right? That's how that's how Dickens was seeing his contemporaries write. That's how he was being told to write and approach his audience. I mean, it was the style of the time. Okay, so finding the lie. In life, we ask why, which is kind of a vague, almost psychological question, right? Like, why does somebody do that? Like, well, there's genetics, he grew up in his family, you know. It's a lengthy, complex question. Often, like, the exact term is a wicked problem, right? If you want to ask why people do a certain thing, it's a wicked problem that is complex and doesn't have a specific answer. In fiction, we approach that differently. If you say, what causes? Because that's a story. Like, you're asking, what event causes this person? And so that creates a very specific piece of backstory. Whether you include it or not, you know, depends on the story and the feedback and whatnot. But when you're creating this lie, you need to be asking, what causes? You know, so if we look at A Christmas Carol, Scrooge has this deep love of money, very greedy. And then in The Ghost of Christmas Past, we are seeing the exact scene with his employer, him getting the advice after he gets his heart broken. That's the moment. That is the cause, right? In fiction, it is that simple and it is clean cut because that's how we communicate that effectively and dramatically to a reader, right? In real life, it's far more complicated. Stay out of that. What causes? Find the story, right? Scrooge gets his heart broken by Belle, gets the advice from his employer. Greed becomes his goal.
Mm, yeah, so it is... So even with Scrooge, then I guess we have some empathy because we see his Christmas past.
Yeah, we see the Christmas past there. So once you know what the lie is, you can go into the backstory and create the most dramatic version that would instill that belief in somebody. And the lie, it develops out of a need to survive, right? Scrooge is, you know, he's a young man, he's dealing with a broken heart for the first time. And if you remember when you got your heart broken the first time, it is like the most painful experience ever. like it's incomparable.
Oh, wow, you're getting vulnerable, dude.
Well, I think everybody can connect to that experience, right? Yeah, like, there's two things that happen in adolescence, right? You have your first experience of love and your first experience of broken heart. And, you know, when you're in your 30s, you've had this experience enough times that you're familiar with it and it's not overwhelming. When you're a teenager, it's so intense. Like, it's just, you know, it's crushing. And this, you know, you see these teenagers, they fall in love for the first time and they're convinced, this is the one, I'll spend my whole life with them. And they break up with them like 2 weeks later, right? But it's because they're dealing with an emotion far stronger than anything they've ever felt, and they've never felt it before. They don't know how to handle it or what it all means and how it's connected in the impact it has on their life. They can't comprehend it. It's new to them, right? And so we take Scrooge and we go to that vulnerable young man, and he experiences this broken heart for the first time, and he has that unbelievable agony. And he doesn't know what to do with it. And the advice he gets in that moment is terrible. And so, you know, it's creating that backstory as dramatic as possible. And it is that develops out of his need to survive. He's trying to figure out how to handle a broken heart. That's what he's trying to figure out at the moment he gets his advice. That's what he's trying to survive. And the dilemma there is, does he choose to believe this person, right? Here he is. He's suffering. He's in agony. And this person says, if you just don't care about anything but money, you won't have to feel this ever again. In that moment, you can understand, I kind of would like anything to never feel like this again. He embraces that, and at no point is he then forced out of that until this night. So, and I think the Scrooge thing is kind of relatable, because a lot of us go through periods in life where we work too much and our relationships suffer. You know, I just published my own novel, and I can tell you, for the last 3 years, all my relationships have suffered a little bit because I've been working so much on the novel.
Start writing, you know? Ladies and gentlemen.
You know, and I would tell myself all the time, be like, just as soon as it's done, I won't have to work so hard on it all the time. As soon as it's done. Well, I told myself that every day for years. Every day for years that went on.
You know? Dang.
So yeah. It's, but I mean, I know I have friends and family who, the same thing. They have become so involved in their work and just trying to provide for their families that they don't spend time with their families, and they've gotten divorced because of it. You know, I mean, Scrooge's example is, you know, summed up in a single moment, but it is easy to see how we all kind of slide into these things. You know, we start focusing on a single goal, and pretty soon we're shutting everything out, right? And so you can see your character developing those lies in the same way if you just kind of put them in real life, right? Like, what does my character want? Be like, okay, and what do, you know, and so in pursuit of that goal on Monday, what did they not do? You know, and do they not do it again on Tuesday? Maybe they do it on Wednesday, you know, maybe they hang out with their friends on Wednesday, and then they'll go a whole week without hanging out with their friends. And then they go a whole month. And pretty soon their friends have kind of moved on, and, you know, they're not even calling him anymore because he keeps saying no, right? You can see your character move there. Now, again, we've mentioned you want to convert that gradual slide into a character lie that happens to us into a dramatic moment, because it's literature, but you can see how that happens to the people around you. And that's part of how we connect to characters who have these lies, is we slide into them in our own ways.
So it's a reasonable lie. So it makes sense.
It makes sense, yeah. I think we already talked about this. Sometimes it's called the ghost, sometimes the secret of the wound. And then in the other... and then also in the references, so we have the a lie itself, the misconception, and then the event that causes the lie. And sometimes the event that causes the lie is referred to as a ghost or wound as well. So again, just because universality sucks in writing and everybody's making up their own words.
Yeah, so, where did you find ghost and wound?
Those are screenplay writing terms for these. So people will ask you, what's the ghost or what's the wound?
Man, I love this.
So... But yeah, we're writers. We like to make up words. And so everybody's just making up their own words for all the same stuff. And it's chaos. I hate it. So there's a lot of different ways to approach with introducing the ghost or the wound for the character lies. Like, sometimes this is done in the prologue. So in the prologue, we'll see some traumatic event happen to the character. And maybe the story starts a few years later. And like, you've already seen the wound. Right. And depending on the story, you may or may not understand what lie they took out from that. But it's a common technique is to have that. Like Batman, that is the exact story of Batman. right? The opening scene, his parents are killed, and that reshapes his entire reality right there, right? That is the wound that haunts Batman and his need for justice, right? And if you look at Batman in the fictional world, it's entertaining to see him. In the real world, he's an incredibly violent and dangerous person, right? Batman has no hesitation about hurting other people. And that is developed out of his character lie, right? That he saw injustice brought by violence, and that what he took away is that justice can be brought by violence as well. Another technique is the slow leak. We get little pieces of backstory building up to reveal the character lie. So in Brandon Sanderson's The Way of Kings, one of the main characters' name is Kaladin. And it starts out that he is a slave, and he really doesn't want to help anybody. He just wants nothing to do with it. And I think it takes two novels before we finally get the whole story, right? So Brandon, the way he writes is every few chapters through the main story, you get a flashback chapter of these characters. And so we get pieces of Kaladin's history chapter by chapter, and we find out about his little brother and his father and why he, you know, didn't go into the family business and why he hates everybody with light eyes. We slowly get all of that leaked out little piece by little piece about his ghost and his wound. So instead of getting it all dumped at once, it's leaked out slowly.
So I just read Killing Gravity by Corey J. White. And in the opening scene, the character is a fugitive on the run. And you can tell that there's a serious wound that happened, like metaphorical wound. And you spend the whole book curious about it. And it just drives you to keep reading because you want to know, okay, what happened? Because you can see the effects of a wound, but you don't yet know how it took place. So, yeah, that can be a really strong motivating force for the reader to progress through the story. So,
yeah. Another example of a slow leak is Darth Vader as Luke's father, right? So throughout the first two movies, you get these slow leaks about who Luke's father is. And each time you get a new piece of information, it shifts the narrative of that story, right? First, he was told that he was, you know, driving freight that helped the rebellion. And then Obi-Wan tells him, he says, no, your father fought for the rebellion. And, you know, then later he finds out that his father was a Jedi, and just, you know, slowly bits and pieces are leaked through until Vader reveals that he is Luke's father at the end of the second movie. So the flashback method, we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but sometimes you'll get like a full reveal, kind of like the prologue, right? Except it's just a flashback that takes place later on and you get the full reveal, which is kind of what happens in Scrooge. Because he's with the Ghost of Christmas Past, it's not told as a flashback, but very much functions in the same manner. We go to the exact moment in the past, and we see exactly how it happens.
I was thinking of Dan Brown. He does that flashback a lot. Like in the Da Vinci Code, the bad guy. You see he's a bad guy, and then about like two-thirds of the way through the book, then it jumps into his backstory. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, this character is sweet.
Yeah.
Even though he's a bad guy, you finally understand the depth of the wound.
Right. And sometimes it's revealed through dialogue. Like in The Expanse, we never get a flashback or anything about, Holden's misconception on reality, but you get dialogue, right? It's a conversation that happens. This is in the television series as opposed to the books that this happens. And, this ambassador goes to his mother and is talking to him about who he is, because she's trying to figure out if he's a terrorist, trying to start a war, or what is he. And you find out that his family owns this large piece of land in Montana that the government or corporation, somebody's been trying to take for years. And the concern is that it's kind of conglomerated, like different, all these people who lived close together merged this land, and they're worried that they're going to take it. And so what they did is, this is some sci-fi stuff, they essentially took some genes from all of them to make one child, which is Holden. And then he would then become the owner of all the land. Essentially, they raised him from the time he was a child to save their world. That's who he is. and that kind of messes up his perception of reality, right? Throughout the series, right? When your whole childhood is you're raised to basically save the world, it can mess up your perceptions a little bit, right? So
Superman complex.
Yeah. So that's the character lie revealed through a dialogue between just two other characters as they're talking about this third person. And then there's the type of story where you have the ghost or the wound is the inciting incident of the story. So a great example of this is the movie P.S. I Love You. She is happily married to this man, and then he gets cancer and he dies. And that is actually the moment that she begins to have her character lie. She believes that she has found the person she will be happy with, and now he died, and she won't be happy again.
Is that opening scene or like no, 25%
so,
in?
So it's the inciting incident. You know, well, I guess maybe not quite the inciting incident. Maybe it's the key incident because he dies, and then she gets the letters. So the letters are kind of the inciting incident that spawn the whole journey. Hmm. But yeah, it's a big incident that happens in the beginning of the movie. Is she's happily married to this man, and then he dies.
So this is different. Well, I guess a prologue happens distantly in the past. Like, distinguish this from that.
I guess this method essentially is the same. The prologue will usually read like a single scene, right? Whereas in this story, it's the opening, right? We have multiple scenes. Yeah, we see them meet. We see them fall in love. We see them get married. You know, we even see them fight a little bit, you know. And so it's not just a single scene. This is the moment, right, where, you know, the beginning isn't them, her at the bedside, and he passes away. Because that's a prologue method. Here, because the whole story is about, you know, this character arc. And so here it's just a bigger scene. And so not a big difference between the prologue method and this. It's just in this movie, it was done as a much bigger piece than a prologue would be.
Okay.
You know, so, but yeah, so it's the inciting incident of the story is them coming to believe this lie. So I guess deciding on which of those methods to reveal your character lie will kind of depend on your story and your feedback. This is crazy. So in one of my writing groups, a girl had a story where the ghost of the heroine, or I guess the secret, was that she was actually a porn star. That was the big reveal. And she also saw this as the big hook of the book, right? That was her. This was her hook. This was her character lie. So going back to P.S. I Love You, right? The big reveal is that she no longer believes she can be happy. And her husband was worried that would happen after he died because he had cancer, so he had a long time to think about it. And he prepared for that, right? So that's the big hook in this story. So that's what she was trying to do with hers. And so it's revealed in Act 1, and it didn't hook anyone. Like, everybody's like, meh.
Well, is it because, like, the heroine was keeping this a secret? Like, how was that a lie that she was telling herself?
So,
That's the problem. It wasn't a lie that she was...
Yeah, this is just how she was framing it to the group, and, you know, none of us cared. We were like, meh, you know? And so that's... I'm just bringing up feedback, because, you know, when you're in... The character lie is the foundation of the character arc. Take it to your group for feedback, because it's a central part of the story. So, yeah, that's kind of where that story was going.
Well, so did you and your group ever figure out a good way to fix that?
No, she wasn't a regular member. She only came a couple times, and she was 100% stubborn that this was central and it would work. Hmm. And, you know, maybe she'll find an audience for that. But, you know, the entire group was just not intrigued by what she was presenting there. So
I think you would have to fix that by, I don't know, she's got to be telling herself that that's the only source of her worth and it's not true.
Mm.
Or it's got to be...
Yeah.
Yeah, she needs to think something about that.
There has to be a deeper thing.
Yeah. 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 Anyway, so. Okay.
And so one of the things in testing the character lie, we talked about a lot of methods in how you'll introduce it to the audience. But as far as pitching it to critique groups and different things like that, I do recommend chunking it into a single chapter, like an early introduction, like P.S. I Love You, or a prologue, just because that way, for feedback, it's all there, and they can look, they can see the lie, they can see the wound, all wrapped up together, and say, I think that's going to work, or I think that's not going to work, right? And so, just for pitching it that way, that's something that I would recommend. And then, so then becomes the big question, the wound, or like the past, the event that causes the lie, do you need to reveal it, right? So going back to the example of Scrooge and the example of Cars, in Scrooge, it's revealed. We see why he believes that. In Cars, we never do. You never find out why Lightning McQueen believes that or sees that. It's never revealed. And so that's something you can weigh in the story is, do I need to reveal that? And in revealing it, will it be weakened or strengthened? Right? Now, I think part of the reason it wasn't revealed in Cars is because of the tight timelines of cinema storytelling, right? I think it was cut for time.
I would also say that I feel like that's a really common trait. And I think if we're honest, we all see that in ourselves, that we're maybe a little too self-centered.
Right.
And I think maybe the commonness of that grievance, of that lie, makes it so that it's not necessary identify anyway.
I think you have a good point here, but like, because it is so common that I think revealing the exact wound might actually distance us from it, because it's so common to be like, yeah, I can kind of see why he feels that way. I felt that way myself. Whereas if you show people, this is why he feels that way, be like,
that happened to me.
Okay. You know, that's not why I feel that way at all. So I think, you know, you bring out a good point, is that if you're dealing with such a common lie, maybe you don't reveal the wound, because that could actually distance people from the character as opposed to bring them in, right? Whereas with Scrooge, it's so extreme and so bizarre, you kind of need to see it to understand it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think...
Because he's so extreme.
He's so extreme.
Lightning is not so extreme. I mean, yeah, he is a little...
He's a little, but not more so than I think anyone has been at some point in their life.
Yeah.
All right, so that establishes what the character lie is, some different approaches to presenting it to the audience, the wound or the background event, the what causes and whatnot. And so next month we'll dive in a little bit more to character arcs and look at how this changes as the story goes on and some approaches there.
This has been great. I feel like I've written this into stories maybe without thinking of it so directly. And I love that you've given us some terms that now we can identify it and make sure that it's in there and that it's strong.
So
this is good. This is good
stuff. Yeah. Well, it's been a good study for me too. Cause I mean, like, I think I can write a better story with character arcs, understanding this foundation, be like, okay, I'm going to go in and I'm going to do this. Not only that, but you also want to look at the plot, because the character lie is going to have a big impact on how they make choices within a plot.
Right.
Right. So anyway, thank you for listening. As always, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review. If you want to support us, check out one of our books. Travis's Song of Locke is a high fantasy, or he's got an awesome array of essays you can check out, or you can check out my book, When the Sky Falls. And thank you for listening.